Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway at 9:18, and I'm very pleased today to have in studio with me a double guest appearance here. Jeff Zanger has joined us, and so has his protege, Brady Ketters, and we're going to learn about a national event that they both participated in, and then later on we're going to talk with the YWCA about a totally different topic. But for now, let's introduce our cast of characters. Jeff Zanger, we'll start with you, age before beauty. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what your relationship is in relation to the project that Brady Ketters has been involved in, please.
Okay. I am a teacher at St. Francis Solanas here in town. I'm starting my 10th year as social studies teacher there for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, my 29th year in education as a whole. And I am part of a group called the JDO Foundation, and they connect schools in America around to schools around the world. And so they are based out of just south of Denver in Littleton, Colorado. And they brought in a lot of our teachers. They have teachers in 34 different countries, and they brought in a lot of teachers and students to come in and present at the International Society of Technology and Education, the ISTE conference. It's a national conference or international conference that goes every year the last week of June. And so teachers and students from the JDO Foundation presented to other, I think there are 17,000 other teachers available. Now they
just a small group.
Yeah, they weren't just sitting there watching us, but they were coming through and hearing our presentations.
Wow, that is fantastic. This is exciting. Now, obviously, you voluntarily joined this group. Not
yes.
Every science and technology teacher is part of that.
Right.
What do you get out of being part of the group?
I get connected to teachers around the world and really passionate educators. My classes are connected to schools. So like Brady's class, when they were in sixth grade, had a partner class in India. And so as we are learning about world history at sixth grade level, one of our units is ancient India and the study of Hinduism, Buddhism, and things like that. And so we got to share that unit with students in India that are about the same age as our students. And it was really an amazing experience.
It's always easier when a kid can ask a kid about their religious beliefs than
yes.
and a teacher trying to tell what Buddhists believe.
Right.
Why not a Catholic kid at St. Francis ask a Buddhist kid
yeah.
and vice versa?
It's ask, real learning.
Yeah,
real
it's
world,
real so. World learning. Well, we're very proud of the fact that you do that. You're kind of a unicorn, Jeff Zanger. You're a man teacher. You're in science and technology, which we hear there aren't enough of those teachers. How come you're not off making millions in the private world? What do you get out of the classroom that keeps you in a life of poverty probably when you could be, you could be out in San Jose, California, where I know they're paying millions of dollars for people with your brain power.
Well, and actually I'm the social studies teacher, but I present or have attended this ISTE conference. And what do I get out of the classroom? Well, I get to see kids every day, and really, especially, again, the last 9 years, being at St. Francis, working with 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and with our, in social studies right now, we are historic. It's like every year it is a historical event, historical election. And
have you noticed every election is the most important election we've ever had?
It definitely has been.
Yeah.
So the last 9 years have been really really important
yeah.
in our country. So, yeah,
in
social Brady, studies class.
In Brady's lifetime,
right.
lots of things. I'm waiting for the day, maybe before I job. This one doesn't really make that much difference.
Right.
I'd like to get back to.
Or the boring year
or
in
the
social
boring
studies
year.
Where there's really just not much going on.
Yeah, there's not much going on in the
yeah.
world. We'll cut. This year will be a very short chapter.
Right.
We'll just regroup and reset. Well, let's get to Brady Ketters. First of all, Brady, I know you want to do three things. You want to tell everybody how much you like Mr. Zanger. You want to introduce who your parents are and how grateful you are to them. And then you might give a shout out to siblings, too, because they might be, putting peanut butter in your pillow or something while you're here. So you better do all those things, okay?
Okay. So, yes, Mr. Zanger is a great teacher. He kind of, if you're not as wide-minded going into sixth grade, he kind of helps to open your worldview and expose you to different things and different viewpoints so that you don't necessarily have to agree to those things, but you can listen to them and understand someone else's point of view. And my parents are Corrine Ketters. She is a nurse at QMG. Hi, Mom. my dad's the controller here at Star Radio. And so he kind of does accounting things for Star Radio, and he also does like payroll and things like that. So hi, Dad.
Yeah,
and
hi, then, hi. We love you for payroll, especially. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what we like most about him, is the days we get paid.
Mm-hmm. And then my sister's name is Amelia Ketters. She just graduated Notre Dame, and she's going to John Wood.
Okay. So, a lot of excitement in the air. Talk a little bit. First of all, I love it when somebody says, in sixth grade, my worldview was broadened. I mean, when I was in fifth grade, my worldview was who came to the playground at the end of my street. Right. That was my whole worldview. Different kids, you know, were like, oh, they don't go to St. Dominic. They go to public school.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. There's other people in the world. So I'm glad that you're actually expanding their world knowledge. That is great. So, Brady, let's get right into this. What did you present? How did you come up with the idea? Let's kind of start from the first step of deciding how you were going to be involved in this. Take us all the way through until you made this presentation. And where was this presentation?
It was in Denver, Colorado.
Okay. And you just got back from that. When did you present?
About the end of June, so okay. About a month ago.
Okay, so how did this all come about? Talk me through it from your point of view.
From my point of view, I came home from school, and normally my dad picks me up on his way home from work. So as we were walking to the car, my dad was like, hey, your teacher, Mr. Zanger, called me today. And I was like, okay, because I didn't know what he was going to say. And so he was like, so you're invited to go to Denver, Colorado and present something. And I think he said that I was going to present at the ITSE conference, which is the International Science and Technology Education Conference. And he said that they would pay for the travel, so like the flight tickets, and for the lodging, so like the hotel rooms, and for some of the meals. And he was like, I think I checked my schedule and I can go. And then Zoe was like, do you want to go? And I was like, yes. So then that was fun. And then after that, I think I would say he told me that maybe early to mid-May. And so that was fun to hear, and I was super excited about that. But we did need to check to see if it was okay with my mom. And she might have gone, but she couldn't get off work because she has
an important job, yeah. As opposed to Brian Ketters, who can just leave anytime he wants.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
okay,
can.
We don't have to go into all the details of that. We just know that your mom has a very important job.
Yes, she does.
People depend on her, whereas, you know, Ketters across the hall. He could be gone whenever he wants. Okay.
Yes.
We've got that down. So it was, you were a go.
Yeah.
But what did you know what you were going to talk about? Did you have to come up with something, or were you given a topic?
So I didn't really know until that day. I just knew I was going to present for the JDO, I think. And then that day, I was kind of confused. And then later, like after lunch, I understood, oh, you're supposed to tell people about it. So that's kind of when I understood. You would like go out to people and be like, hey, would you like to learn about the JDO Foundation? And they'd either be like, sure. Or they'd be like, no, thank you. So, but usually it was a yes, and then you tell them all about it, and yeah. So you're kind of like, you'd go up to people and you'd ask them, hey, do you want a pen or some post-it notes? And then they'd be like, sure. Or you'd ask them, you want to learn about the JDO Foundation? And they'd be like, yes.
After you gave them pens and post-it notes, what more could they say, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, this is exciting because you're going to use some of those skills. I don't really understand what this foundation is, so I'm going to learn all about it from Brady Ketters, who went all the way to Denver, Colorado to be part of this great group, and when we come back, you're going to learn all about it too, and we're very happy to have Brady as our guest today, and it's really enriching to know that there are some great young kids coming up and that our future world is very safe thanks to great teachers like Jeff Zanger and great students like Brady Ketters. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Jeff Zanger, teacher at St. Francis School here in Quincy, and Brady Ketters, who is one of his students and recently attended a conference in Denver, Colorado. And so, Brady, talk about I'm a person. Where's my pen? Give me my pen and my free sticky notes, and then tell me about. So you approach me, and what would you say? Just give me the whole pitch.
Okay. So I'd say, would you like to learn about the JDO Foundation?
And I'd say, what's that?
And I would say, there are a foundation that gives, I believe, free technology to schools in a variety of different countries. I believe it's 34 countries worldwide. And so then you learn about each other's cultures, and you can make Google Slides, and then you share them with each other through, like, the teachers and stuff, and then you can learn about each other's cultures, and the students make the slides, so it's like the students are teaching each other, which is really cool. And then you can also go on to Google Meets with them, and you can talk to them, like, not face-to-face, but, like, you can still speak to them, and, like, a lot of them speak English, which is great, but I don't really know what you would do if they didn't speak English.
Speak English that we've had.
And let's talk about that, because you've had this experience, Brady, in your classroom with Mr. Zanger. You were paired with kids from India, obviously a culture you're not familiar with. Tell us a little bit about what you learned about children in India. And then I also want to ask you, what did you learn about yourself as an American child when you learned about people from India? What were some of the takeaways from just the peer-to-peer learning that you had with children your own age that are the same age, same, you know, physical development, and how they're dealing with life?
Well, Mr. Zanger taught us a lot about, we watched some videos about how crowded it is in India and how their religions are really different. I do actually think there is Catholicism in India, but it's very little.
There is, and I will tell you this, this is something new that has happened just in the last, since the last election, because I have some very good friends that are Catholic nuns over there, and they are under a great deal of oppression now. The government has come in and decided that instead of freedom of religion, where there is a dominant religion in the culture, but other religions are allowed to operate freely, they have clamped down, and you're not allowed to have any religious statues, you're not allowed to show Mary praying the rosary, you're not supposed to do those things. In the orphanages and hospitals that they run, they're still allowed to do those charitable works, but they're not allowed to attribute it to Jesus Christ or to teach any of the professions of the Catholic faith. So just in the time since you have been talking with children there, there has been a crackdown on Christianity in general. So what did you learn about yourself?
I learned that we might be a little more expressive than I previously thought, because the people in the Eastern world, they could be like really upset with you, and I'm pretty sure you learned that they could like never tell you, because they keep those emotions inside of themselves and they don't really tell people those things.
So they're afraid of being rude. They have an internal opinion of you, but they would never disagree with you, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Okay. And so you didn't have anything to compare it to. So do you understand now why sometimes people think Americans are rude? Because we tend to express ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad, we tend to let our feelings out. Did you feel like they were smarter than you? They were learning more than you? They were more advanced than you when it came to certain subjects?
Kind of, because so I believe that they go to school from like 8 to maybe like 4 or something, and then after that they eat supper, and then they have like tutoring sessions from like 6 to 8, I believe, or something like that. So they spend a lot of time learning and preparing for like a career test, I think it is, that can like, you can either be like really successful or you could be not so successful. So they spend a lot of time on that, which it kind of makes you feel like they're smarter than you because they spend more time learning.
They spend more time learning, but on the flip side of that, they don't have a lot of time for the recreation, and you have a lot of hobbies, including theater.
Yes.
So I'm sure you enjoy learning in the classroom with Mr. Zanger and your other teachers, but you also enjoy maybe just playing a ball with your friends or being on a theater production. So it is a different thing. Your parents aren't pressuring you now at the sixth grade level, seventh grade level, to try to figure out what you want to be when you grow up, right?
No.
Yeah, and that's probably different there. There's a lot of... The stakes are higher there, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you graduate from high school and decide, maybe I'll take a year. I won't be like my sister. I won't go to John Wood right away. I'll travel around the country and get a little bit of my own self-education. That wouldn't be too shocking. But if you try to do that in India, you'd be on the street begging, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. Is that one of the reasons why this is so important, these cultures, so that we do understand who our competition is? These Chinese kids, these Indian kids, these Filipino kids, they're coming for us, aren't they?
Well, and I just like exposing the kids to these other cultures. And like the students in India, the school is from, you know, a very wealthy part of India.
Yeah,
and
that's the other thing. I'm sure they're not meeting the average Indian student.
Right, and in speaking to them and to their teacher, and she is talking about, you know, that they, as sixth graders, are preparing for a test that to get into the high school, like if they want to go to a top-tier college, they have to get into a top-tier high school. And to get into top-tier high school, they have to score really well on a test at the 6th, 7th, 8th grade level. And
that's pressure, man.
Oh, and it's a lot. But she said, we have over a billion people. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's so
much more. It is
the
most populous country now in the world. It has overtaken China, and their population rate is growing.
Right.
Because China is restricting, of course, its reproduction. So.
And so it was, but it was so much fun getting to know them, because they were fun kids as well. And just seeing, you know, we've had partnerships with students from Croatia, and to see their different perspective, and students from Sweden, and it was a school.
Oh, how Sweden, because that is such a, I was just talking with a guy from Sweden, and it's more of a socialist, you know, one for all and all for one, mm-hmm. rather than I'm going to claw my way to the top.
And it is, but the school is in Malmo, and they were mostly immigrants from the Middle East.
Ah.
And so it was really interesting to have conversations with refugees, because they had left, this was probably 6-7 years ago, after the Syrian war and everything going on there. So to hear their perspective on current events, and, you know, to talk to a Muslim refugee from Syria,
Living in a Lutheran country like Sweden.
And
there really is no official religion, but everybody's Lutheran. It's an unofficial, because everybody's Lutheran.
And
it
was interesting, because after we do, as he said, meets once a month with our partner class, and the kids break into what's called breakout rooms. So there, two or three of my students are in a meet with two or three of their students. And my students came back after the meet, and we were talking, and they said, Mr. Zanger, we thought Muslim girls were quiet. They were really loud and running around. And I said, yeah, because they're just 12-year-old girls. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Well, know. Until they go through puberty, they don't have to even put on the, they don't have to wear the things that mask them after they go into adulthood.
Yeah, what we have found out in the 8 years that I've done this is kids are kids. So kids in Croatia are just like kids in Sweden, or just like kids in India, or just like kids here. I mean, you know, most of them play Fortnite. Most of them enjoy volleyball or basketball. Most of them do not know anything about American football. They don't care about American football. If we say football, they're thinking soccer, and they don't know why we don't care more about soccer. And so lots of similarities, and that's, as Brady said, you know, expanding the worldview. That's really what I'm striving for, is, you know, when I was in grade school, when I was Brady's age, you know, Croatia was part of Yugoslavia. They were the enemy. They were communists. We didn't like them. We rooted against them during the Olympics. And and then now my partner teacher in Croatia, one of our first projects, we compared civil wars. Well, our civil war, 1861 to 65, their civil war was when I graduated college. It was the Balkans War. And, you know, her grandparents died in the Civil War. They were taken by the other side. Her uncle disappeared. They never saw him again. Their church in Glina, Croatia, was burned down, and you could see they kept it as the front door, because you could see bullet holes in the door and as a memorial. And so it was a whole different conversation about Civil War. So again, each time we have an experience with another school, we have that kind of, well, you see it differently.
Yes, I was just up in Canada, and the War of 1812. Don't let anybody in America tell you that's the name of that war. It's the War of American Aggression and America Invasion. So when you're in Canada and you say, do you reenact the War of 1812? They say, no, we reenact the War of American Aggressive Invasion. So it's all from what perspective you're hearing it. it's been delightful to have both of you. And Jeff Sanger, come back every year, please.
I would
and
love
bring,
to.
And bring another one like Brady. Mm-hmm. Brady, I will put a little pressure on you. What do you want to be when you grow up? Do you have any idea what kind of career field you're going to entertain?
I might want to be a family medicine doctor or an engineer, perhaps, because I want lots of kids, and kids tend to be expensive, so you might need more money to pay for those children.
Okay, well, you know, another really good-paying job, comptroller at Star Radio. Controller at Star Radio is a pretty good-paying job. You live a pretty good lifestyle. These Indian kids aren't the typical Indian kids. The kids you were talking to are not the normal kids that Mother Teresa's. So you do understand you're a lucky young man, right? Good. Keep that in. And you're going into what grade?
Eighth grade.
You're going into eighth grade. Okay. Well, make that last year at St. Francis just a fabulous one, okay?
Okay.
And I hope to see you at the Quincy Community Theater, either backstage or front stage, okay?
Okay.
And Mr. Sanger, thank you again for everything you're doing. Wow. I went to St. Dominic's. Now I wish you'd been my teacher at St. Francis. I mean, the only thing we had was pagan babies. That's all we learned about was pagan babies. That's how old I am, Jeff. We don't do that anymore, do we? Things have changed considerably. We'll take a break, head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. When we come back, we're going to talk about the YWCA. So stay tuned. But first, we've got to hear from Rex Battery. They bring you this Farm Market Report. We are back, 944, Talk Radio 930, WTAD. My guest today on the second half of the Mary Griffith Show is Ryan Roberts, the Executive Director of the YWCA of Quincy, and Scott Walden, who's a retired judge in our community and is involved in housing solutions for Quincy. We've talked a lot about the fact that there's a great need for more housing in Quincy. And so we're going to tackle that project today. So, Ryan Roberts, let's start with you.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about what the Y is already doing and how this is going to be an adjunct to that. And then we'll get to Scott Walden and see what his particular take on this is.
Okay. So I've been with the YWCA for about 8 months now. The Y has actually been active in the Quincy community since 1905. So we haven't been doing housing that entire time. We've done a variety of different things.
And I'm sure the place where you went for exercise and I learned ballet.
Then. Oh yeah. I'm sure your listeners know a lot of different things that we've done over the years. But currently we do work, homeless services. And so we have a variety of grants that we administer for that purpose. We have three main programs right now. We have what is called the Permanent Supportive Housing. And so that is a federal grant through the Housing and Urban Development HUD organization. And we use those funds to subsidize utilities, rent, and different things like that. But one thing that's unique about the Y is we also do active case management with all of those families. And so we work with them on any of the obstacles that they have to obtaining and keeping housing, stable housing. And so in general, people in our program are there for anywhere from 2 to 4 years. We will have some people that may never actually exit, but we do have a lot of people that exit. A few months ago, we actually had a young family with a four-year-old little girl. They exited our program and purchased a home. So we've got a lot of success stories over the years. For the last 3 years, we've had kind of an emergency housing program that we call our GAP program. So it's a 12-month program, and it was kind of an offshoot of everything that happened during COVID and things like that. So
right. That's
why it's all, this year will be the last year we're running out of money for it. But with that one, we have less restrictions on who we can put in the program and things like that. We still do case management with them. It's a little more intensive because we're looking to get them out within 12 months. But we're able to help people with that. And the latest thing the Y has initiative is our justice program. So we in the past 2 years have been able to buy and rehab some homes here in Quincy, and we work with Bella Ease on case management for that, and the people that we house in that program are recommended to us by the probation officers here in town.
Okay. So I may now know why former Judge Scott Walden is interested in this. Judge Walden, talk about this. What makes you an advocate for this program? How are you involved in this program?
Well, it started with Meals on Wheels, really. My wife and I, when the pandemic hit and being retired, began delivering meals on a fairly regular basis. We call in on Monday and say, we have these days that we can deliver. Well, a lot of those places are not very nice. And frankly, some of them were just unsafe to deliver to. So
you were shocked.
Yes,
I mean,
I think
you live
so.
In this community, but yet you were kind of shocked at some of the housing conditions.
Right, yeah. Places I wouldn't live and couldn't imagine how other people could live.
I had the same experience when I volunteered for a mission at my church to take communion to people. Most of the places were very nice, but there were a few people like, I can't believe somebody lives here.
Right.
And they have a job, but this is the best they can do. So your eyes were open.
Right. And I guess Robin and I got the word out about how we felt about this, and I got approached by Kevin Crummel, actually in a grocery store, saying, hey, would you like to meet with us? And there's, I don't know, 8 to 10 people who get together and trying to figure out what to do. And initially the thought was, well, maybe we should build something, a house. Then it was, we met with the people from the Y, with Quinata, with the Salvation Army to find out what the need was. And finally, we've decided to partner with the Y, who can also help the people who are served by the YWCA, or the Salvation Army and Quinata.
Yeah, that can be a symbiotic relationship.
Exactly. And we've decided to buy a house.
Okay.
And rehab the house, and our group is trying to raise money to do that.
So it's not Habitat for Humanity. Is it part, I mean, are you getting your properties from the Fix or Flatten from the city? Where is this property, and how did you acquire it, and how are you going to rehab it?
We don't have it yet.
Uh-huh.
But we've got one on our list, and it's on the north end, and Ryan and the Y are in the process of having contractors go through the property to decide how it can be fixed up, to make sure it can be fixed up, and I think we're well on our way to having enough money to buy the house and do some major rehab to it.
So this sounds to me almost like a small private band of people who just got together and saw a need and said, let's quit talking about it, let's do something about it.
That's exactly what
okay.
it is.
So how can we then help?
Give us money.
Okay. Well, what's your address?
Well, Mary, the
it's through the Y.
It goes through the Y. They're 501c3. We're not. We're just a group of people. And I can tell you, we've already raised about $90,000.
Wow. That should be enough to buy and rehab a single-family home.
Get us well on the way. And it's not going to be a single-family home. It's the place that we've got our eye on. Maybe Ryan could tell more about that.
Okay.
So we do have a location secured. The owner of the location is the property's not listed. So
they're saving it for
yes,
you.
And they're saving it for us. They're giving us a really good deal on the property. They're also there's some extra land that comes with the property that we may be able to do some more on. And they're basically they're willing to sell us the land for what the paperwork's going to cost. So that additional land
that's
we
a
might
nice
oh no yeah so
generous donation.
So we are, we've already had a home inspector go through the home. I currently have 3 contractors that I, have requested bids from. And so they're going to go in, look at it, see exactly what we will need to do in order to make it, you know, safe and livable. And we're looking at either making it into, 2 two-bedroom units or 4 one-bedroom units. So they're going to give me bids on both.
Oh, okay.
And so once they come back, we'll be able to move forward with the purchasing and stuff, but we want to make sure that people's money is being used well. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing our due diligence on everything and making sure that the project's going to be successful before we take steps to move forward.
Will this be rental or will they be purchasing these units?
So we will be purchasing them. They will be rental units. They will be low-income units. So
Section 8?
Possibly. We'd have to look at if the Y can accept Section 8 and different things like that. But honestly, the Y will be able to use these for anything that we need to use them for. And the nice thing about that is with our current grant funding, we have a lot of restrictions. So we can't put, you know, if a house is placarded here in town, we don't have a place that we can put somebody like that. We could use these apartments for that. In our justice program, the tenants pay 30% of their income. So if their income is zero, they pay zero. If their income is $3,000, they'd pay 30% of that or up to market value. They will not pay over market value. So there's a lot of different ways, since this is privately funded, that we can use this property in ways that we can't use the funding in other ways. So
right, getting it more out of government control and into private control. You know, Scott Walden, you sat on the bench all those years, and you certainly were not blind to the fact that people had some dire circumstances. Housing is one of those basic needs. If kids grow up with housing insecurity and going from, you know, couch to couch, surfing on whatever month somebody will accept them, it's so disruptive to their school career. I know my husband's a school bus driver. You'll have a kid on your route for a month, and then they'll be off on somebody else's route because they moved. It can be very detrimental. It's, you know, it just causes problems. Are a lot of our social justice and social ills really caused at the heart by the fact that people are so housing insecure?
I'm sure that's a large part of it for a lot of people. The superintendent of schools just spoke at our Kiwanis Club, Breakfast Kiwanis, and there are over 100 kids are classified as homeless, which means that they're housing insecure. When you think of that, about that, why in Quincy should that be the case? So to have this sort of flexibility where if somebody's suddenly out because of domestic violence issues or poverty or whatever, for the YW to be able to just step in and say, okay, here's a spot. That's a wonderful
thing. Because we
all
know our shelters get so full. The Salvation Army will tell you there are many nights, especially in the winter, when they simply can't house anybody else.
Yeah, there's wait lists at all of our shelters.
And Juanada has, you know, similar difficulties at certain times. And so it really is a pandemic problem, not to do with COVID-19, but a pandemic of homelessness in our community. That one house is nice. Four units is nice. Scott Walden, what's it going to take to solve the bigger problem? If you've got 100 kids that admittedly are homeless in the Quincy Public Schools, not to mention in the county and maybe some that aren't counted, thank you. I'm glad you're trying to build something. But, I mean, is it sometimes you feel like you're like it's a drop in the ocean?
Yes, certainly that's a reason to perhaps be a bit discouraged, but at least we feel like we're getting the ball rolling. If we can create four units where people can live, then wonderful, and we're on our way. And hopefully this will inspire other people to do this. One of the things, Mary, is so frustrating. Robin went on a housing inspection, and the city was there, the inspector, and the alderman was there, and it was great, and they found, yes, there was a violation, and so the inspector says no one can live here. So on the one hand, the issue was sort of addressed, but the people became homeless
right at
that point.
I had the same situation when I was very young reporter. This is over 40 years ago. I won this big award from the Missouri Broadcast Association for this housing conditions of the poor and how horrible they were. Well, after I went out and called out five different homes, guess what? The city of Hannibal, embarrassed, went and shut down those five different homes. Well, you know what? That was a consequence little junior reporter, cub reporter Mary Griffith hadn't thought about. As much of a hellhole as that was, it was home. It was not much of a roof, but it was a roof. I think we're just amazed at how horrible some of the conditions are that people live in Quincy. Even people who are not homeless, a lot of people would not choose to live there.
Right.
I mean, I think we know there's a problem when at the Welcome Inn, which was about as deplorable as most human beings can imagine, There were still people crying. Don't put me out of here. I have nowhere else to go. I'll be under the underpass. So it really is, in terms of moral, ethical, legal, whatever hat you want to put on, it is a extreme need in our community. And so obviously you can make a donation to the YWCA. And what do they put in the memo line? Housing support?
Yeah, so they're going to want to put Housing Quincy Solutions in the memo line. And the money is tracked completely separately. It is going to have its own bank account, everything. So the money is separate from our other operating funds. So the public can be reassured that their money is only going to this project if they donate to it.
And the name of this group again is?
Housing Solutions Quincy.
Housing Solutions Quincy. Yeah. And if you can get a whole bunch of other people to start their own little group and their own little coffee clutch and figure this out, you'll be happy to do that. Thank you so much for your time today. We'll talk more.
Okay, thank
you, Mary.
Because
I think these are some interesting solutions to some serious problems in our community. Thank you.
Thank you.